For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Looking forward to this talk, not because I have any great expertise, but because I think of it as an encouragement talk, trying to remind you about what you've already learned and what you can do in your life. I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about awakening off the cushions. And I think that the topic came to me because of a talk that Hoketsu had given in last week about work as Tenzo. You know, maybe not so much in Japanese Zen, but in American Zen, we have a real tendency to think of Zen practice as exclusively what happens in the zendo and on your cushion or maybe at home, and that it is exclusively zazen. That's really not a reflection of what Zen training in Japan or China or Korea has been. If you think about it, for example, in Japanese monasteries, there are two intensive practice sessions each year, 3 months long, more or less, each time. And a fairly standard schedule at a Soto monastery would be that the monks would have 3 or 4 periods of zazen every day, except during sesshin. Longer periods, maybe 50 minutes. So 2.5 or 3.5 hours of zazen every day. 3 services, maybe. You know, maybe one about an hour, 50 minutes to an hour, and then 20 or 30 minutes each for the others. You get about 7 hours of sleep, maybe less some places. Meals might take 1.5 hours on your day, probably less. So that leaves you with 9 or 10 hours or more of work, of activity. None of that, the work, is presented to the monks as something you have to do in order to keep the monastery doors open. It's part of your practice. And in keeping with the whole practice in monasteries, you're always being watched by your seniors to make sure you're doing everything correctly, and especially that you're paying attention to what you're doing. So there's very much a focus on Zen practice being something you do in activity and off of your cushions. And that realization, the realization we are looking for in practicing, is a realization that in the middle of our awakened activity. You know, it's not my intent to undervalue zazen at all. And I think that the ability to awaken in activity really is dependent upon your continuing to do zazen. But there isn't really a dichotomy. You have to think, what is zazen? It is an intentional activity itself. Not a lot of movement is going on, but it is nothing more than sitting on your cushion and breathing and awakening to that, doing it in an awakened way, breath after breath, moment after moment. Suddenly you realize you haven't been following your breath. You've waked up. And you return to your breath, you return to your posture, and when you do that, you, in becoming intimate with your breath and with your posture again, become intimate with this entire moment and the surroundings there. You've stepped outside of, not stopped, but stepped outside of that whole worrying activity of fantasy and delusion, where you close yourself off worrying about something else other than what's going on here, worrying about what bad things are going to happen or how you're going to be okay or how you have done something to validate you. You step outside of that separation and return to this moment and this activity. That is not what we ordinarily think of when we talk about transcendence, but it is transcendent. It's going beyond our separation of the world into ourselves and everything else out there. That's not an experience of oneness or emptiness, but it is the living out of emptiness and non-duality. It's stopping you from making two, making yourself and the world into two. And I think that if you think back on your experience, it's very often the case, especially when you're sitting in sesshin, your mind is quieted down, you're getting very, very aware. You may even be congratulating yourself on how aware you're getting. It's starting to get very easy to see through those thoughts that come up and pierce through them to see everything there. And you start becoming aware of everything around you, and it stretches out a little bit more, and you go, oh, yes, yes, I am here in this moment. I'm part of everything going on. Here is this oneness. And then you say, but where's my breath? I think that those experiences of oneness are not real experiences of oneness. They're just images that we create and ideas that we create. They don't have anything like the authenticity we bring just by sitting, delivering ourselves to this moment, drifting away, waking up, and coming back. We continually wake up and turn ourselves back toward this moment and whatever it brings, whatever the sounds are around us, however our knees feel, whatever emotions we have, we're there and we're one with it. That is what I think of as Zen experience. Coming back right now, being intimate with what we're doing right here. And it's what we learn first sitting on the zafu. In a way, there's no dichotomy here. I mean, sitting on the zafu is just sitting and breathing. It's an activity. It's something we do intentionally. But it's really pared down so there are no distractions. And you can look at it as either the easy way to have this experience or the tough way, because you're put in front of a blank wall and nothing else is going on. There are no distractions. And it's sort of shoved right in your face that some huge proportion of the time you're not there. But you do learn to recognize that this is happening and come back to your experience. And as you sit and get experience doing this, this is an experience that starts to spread into the rest of your life. In the middle of some activity, working as Tenzo, you realize that you've been chopping carrots, but you haven't been paying attention, but miraculously you haven't removed a finger. Maybe that's why being Tenzo is very good training, because if you're in the kitchen, you're surrounded by sharp objects, hot objects, and if you're not paying attention, you're going to poison everybody. So you are called to be present at all times. And I think that that's the experience that we bring. We have, let's call them flashes, where you wake up in the middle of your activity. You go, wow, I really have not been paying attention. You notice that you haven't, you've waked up, and that true practice is to come back to what you're doing and do it. And that the perfect road is, even if it's not something particularly physical, if you're working at the computer, you're sitting on the phone and talking, it's very helpful to bring you into the moment and keep you in the moment just to adjust your posture, sit up straight, and balance. There aren't really techniques. It's not really a technology that's going on. What you have is a receptiveness, let's say, to these moments when you wake up spontaneously, and the intention then to not say, oh man, I've really been dreaming, I think I'll continue that, but to turn back to the world and be engaged in the world and with this moment and your activity. You know, there are tricks, I suppose, that we can come up with to remind ourselves, to cue ourselves that this is something that we can do. I mean, the classic one is whenever the telephone rings. I always find that meeting a person, starting a conversation, sort of brings me back right here. And just transitions from activity to activity seem to be natural times that call us to awaken, to an awakening. But the experience is very similar to sitting on the Zafu and practicing Zazen. We sit on the Zafu, we breathe out, we let it go. We breathe in, and it's another breath. We let it go, we breathe again. We keep bringing ourselves back here, breath after breath after breath. It's not that we're concentrating on the breath and excluding everything else so that we can have some really clear experience of the breath. We're in touch with the breath. We aren't in a bear hug with the breath. We're here being with the breath. We're intimate with the breath and intimate with the world. The same experience comes when you're working in the kitchen. You chop the carrot, chop the celery, you fill the pot with water and put it on the stove. It's just moment after moment, each activity in the world, alive and intimate. Fresh, action after action, moment after moment. And it seems odd, but I think that this is where we experience emptiness. You know, it's appropriate that we chanted the Heart Sutra, where we have form is emptiness, emptiness is form. You can correct me, but my experience has been that every time you have an experience of emptiness, it's just another image or just another idea that you're thinking about that's pulled you away from what's going on right now. I mean, I think that when we think of emptiness, everyone must come up with some sort of image like the one I have, and that is I spent 5 or 6 years living in New England, and in the fall, along the Connecticut River, every morning fog would come off the river, climb up the banks, and completely cover all the towns on either side. And the highway is always up on the top of the valley, And you would look down in the valley if you're driving down the highway in the fall, and you would see nothing but a thick cloud bank. And you could, looking very carefully, you could see maybe some white building, steeple popping up, a bell tower. I think all of our images or something like that, when we try to think about it, it is some sort of messy, undifferentiated picture. But the interesting thing is that we meet emptiness by living emptiness, by coming to things and being intimate with things, by taking concrete actions and letting them go and taking the next concrete action. All of those are our expressions of emptiness. Once we start to have some experience on the Zafu, start having that spreading over into our life, you know, I think we realize that whatever confronts us in our life, that's the practice place. Every action we take can be an expression of Dharma. And there are no tricks, it's just intention to prepare you to do that. And from that awareness, I think, I will just leave it at that, that in those moments of awareness, turning toward whatever is in front of us, that is the realization, that is enlightenment is realization. Let's just leave out the enlightenment part. It is realization. It is making real what is, expressing what is real. So without wanting to drag this out too much, I wanted to give us a chance to take a look at a case. You've got your sheets. It's really talking about activity and action is realization. This is from case 26 from Mumon Khan. Two monks roll up the blinds. So I'll go ahead and read it. The case is Fa Yen of Qingliang took the high seat before the midday meal to preach to the assembly. He pointed to the bamboo blinds. Two monks went and rolled them up in the same manner. Fa Yen said, "One gains, one loses." Other translations just say, "One gain, one loss." Wu Men, who collected the stories in the Mumon Khan and annotated them, said, "Tell me, which one gained, which one lost? If you have the single eye regarding this, you will see where the national teacher Qingliang failed. But I must warn you strictly against arguing gain and loss." And his poem was, "When they are rolled up, the great sky is bright and clear, but the great sky still does not match our way. Why don't you throw away that sky completely? Then not a breach of wind will come through." So I'm not going to talk about who Fa Yen was, other than to say he was there. I don't know. There are a lot of koans about Fa Yen. In this case, it's a very influential case. It's not just case 26 in Mumon Khan. It's the 27th case in Shoyoroku. And what it's talking about, the situation, before the midday meal, they're in, getting ready. Fa Yen sits in his seat and he's pointing to the blinds that are on the west side and the east side of the room. They had those in China, in particular because it was brutally hot, and it would, it was, you had to have blinds because during the midday there was too much light and the heat was really oppressive. As the day went on, you could roll them up. So Fayen takes the high seat, he points to the blinds, and two monks roll them up. Fayen says, "One gains, one loses. Or one gain, one loss." You have to ask yourself, what does that mean? The interesting thing is that the translation is clear that the two monks rolled up the blinds in the same manner. So, who is gaining and who is losing? What's the gain? What's the loss? There have been a lot of different commentaries on that. One modern commentator is a translator of Mumonkan and Blue Cliff Record, Sekida Katsuki. I don't know if you've read his translations. His view is that Fayen pointed to the blinds because it was dark and he wanted light. And the monks realized that he wanted them to roll up the blinds because he needed the light, so they rolled it up. And so he said, he praised them by saying, "That's a gain." And then Sekida says, well, what must have been happened next was that they realized that they'd gained merit by doing this for the assembly. And that's a loss. And I have to tell you, I think that's a completely worthless commentary by a modern Zen teacher. There have been some others. I think it's particularly helpful that Dongshan is going to be the subject of a book Taigen's working on now, says that even when he was alive, this was a famous case, and he pointed out some people think that the monks Fayen pointed to the blinds, and that this was like a lot of other koans, like the monk asking, "What is Buddha? What is Dharma? What is the truth?" And the Zen master would point to the oak tree and say, "The oak tree in the garden." The idea that you're here intimate with the oak tree in this moment. This experience of being here intimate with the oak tree and everything else is Buddha. Or the dried shit stick, or Zuigan, I don't remember his Chinese name, the man would keep holding up his thumb. All these demonstrations of Buddha in Buddha nature. So Dongshan said there are lots of people who think, okay, that's what's going on. Fayen is trying to show, somebody says, well, what's the Buddha? And he points over to the blinds, and the monks are idiots. And they think, well, they don't understand that this is a demonstration, so they're going to just go over and roll up the blinds. So the gain is Fayen saying, well, I gained. I told them, I showed them what Buddha is, and these idiots didn't work it out. And then Dongshan says another version is, some people say that one monk understood that this was a demonstration of reality, and after Fayen demonstrated reality, he was going to go demonstrate Buddha too by actively with a demonstration of rolling up the blinds. But the other monk was an idiot. He just thought he was supposed to be letting the light in and letting the air in. And Dongshan's commentary was that this is like washing dirt with mud. So he was not impressed with those answers. On the other hand, Wan Song, in his commentary in the Shogyo Roku, said, when I talk to you about this case and provide commentaries, there's gain and there's loss. And when you come to hear my commentary on this koan, there's gain and there's loss. So what I think we have to propose to ourselves is that in, I think it's true that Dongshan was, we have to read the koan to say he was pointing to the blinds as, what is Buddha, what is Dharma, what is reality, pointing to the blinds and inviting the monks to take the next step. Not a static, so that it's not a static demonstration. It's not some sort of concept that, oh, everything is Buddha. Like there's some Buddha substance. So this cup is Buddha, and the floor is Buddha, and the blinds are Buddha. That's true in a way, but that's not the point. The monks then got up and they demonstrated by rolling up the blinds. And Fa Yen said, one gain, one loss. One gains, one loses. That's the challenge to each of us then. So when we're sitting on our cushions, breathing in, breathing out, waking up, turning to, back to this moment, what is the gain and what is the loss? What is gained, what is lost? When you're in the kitchen chopping vegetables, what's gained and what's lost? Who is the one who gains and who is the one who loses? Well, woman said, tell me which one gained, which one lost. If you have the single eye regarding this, you'll see where the national teacher Ching Nang failed. I must warn you strictly against arguing gain and loss. What is he talking about? Where's the failure? I think he's not saying he's wrong, but he is saying that's not what I would have done. What would you have done if they'd gone, you pointed to the blinds, they'd go roll the blinds up, what would you have said? I would have said, thank you, go take your places. I think that would have been a better demonstration, but it wouldn't have been as good as a koan. So, I'm going to invite you now. Who gained and who lost? What was gained and what was lost? Yes?
One question. It was really, I need to clarify something. It was really wonderful listening to you when you started the conversation about the Zen practice. Before we got in here, and it was, I wish I had a recording because I could always listen over and over again. It was just so beautiful when you spoke about sitting and the practice and reading, just to acknowledge that. Secondly, when you're talking about this, I still do not understand many things here. It almost looks like you're describing the, like an elephant in a dark room, where, you know, where somebody can make, like, you gave the example of how somebody how somebody made an interpretation, and then many people can have a different interpretation.
I think there are certainly multiple readings that would be legitimate readings. I like one reading that would say, moment by moment, reality is freshened. There's an action, you let it go, you throw it away, you take the next action. You breathe, it's gone. You take the next breath. You let it go, you take the next breath. over and over again, reality refreshes itself. Concretely, and that's an expression of emptiness. And I think that that is in accord with Wu Men's poem, where he says, when they're rolled up, the great sky is bright and clear because there's light, and there's no longer a barrier between the inside of the room and the outside of the room. It's perfectly open now. But, and you can see the sky, the great sky does not match our way. Why don't you throw away that sky completely? So, Wu Man is suggesting that emptiness isn't just an emptiness. It's not some great spaciousness, necessarily. It's concrete. It's blinds, and it's rolling up blinds. And then it's returning to your place and eating lunch. But I think there can be other readings too. But the real, you know, the real answer to the koan, I think, is to study the koan, you would sit and breathe and do zazen. And maybe breathing out, you might say, one gain, one loss to yourself. Silently. Breathe in, one gain, one loss. Just zazen, dropping that phrase in, and see if that does anything for you. Not thinking about it, not reasoning with it, but to see if that, you know, strikes a note with you.
Yeah. What is the single eye? How do you read that? Says, Wu Man's comment, if you have the single eye of groundedness, etc. What is that? Referring to you.
Well, I've always read the single eye as the true not dual eye. And the eye that's going to see into the koan. And see beyond images of emptiness and just emptiness as space to concrete emptiness. But it may be a figure of speech that's common, what do you think?
Well, I would say here, this is about non-separation. No inside, no outside. No gain, no loss. Not dissecting. So the eye of wholeness. Josh.
It's kind of what how I interpreted that, but what I committed that to say one gain, one loss is a concept, right? Or even with the breathing, one gain, one loss. Gain by paying attention to your breath, but you lose by paying attention to your it becomes a concept in itself.
That's right, it could. Yeah, and especially as you we try to manipulate our zazen sometimes. We have an idea or an experience and we feel really calm and we start concentrating on our breath to sort of keep that feeling or to encourage some state of clarity. And that would be the same sort of thing. Shutting it out.
It goes away.
Yeah.
Yes, Eric. I don't know a word of classical Chinese, but I'd be curious in the original, do we have the luxury of assuming that he's talking about the monks? And he says one gain, one loss, maybe it's just the up and down and
slow. No, we don't. I think that Dongshan is definitely saying, he says that the idea that one monk gains and one monk loses, that's just washing dirt with mud.
Although it's most often understood yeah. that way, yes.
Okay.
But he's talking about one monk.
There's nothing in the Quran that suggests they did anything differently.
I never see into these very well, but thinking about women's comment, if you have a single eye regarding this, you'll see where the national teacher Xiang Wang failed. Could that be read as, the monks just did what they did without comment, and then Fa Yan saw fit to add something. Not only did he add something, it was this sort of evaluative something, so that the game, if you want to put it in those terms, would be the monks and Fa Yan kind of slipped up a little bit, maybe. So
that's interesting. And I guess another question is, even if the monks weren't doing this as an expression of their awakening, if you're a monk in the assembly and you're watching this, is that any less an expression of this moment than if they were awakened?
So partly this is just about response. Just doing the next thing.
Yeah.
Dawn had a comment.
Yeah. You had said something earlier, and I'm not going to, but something about not stopping, but stepping outside of during Zazen.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you're daydreaming or something like that, or doing whatever, and so you realize that, but you don't want to stop it. You want to just step outside of it. And I really like that you kind of, keyed in. It was something like that anyhow. I'm not going to, I can't remember exactly. But I just really like that you really kind of pointed that out, that it's not about stopping, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hear that, I guess, but, I forget. So it was nice to hear that. Because I do tell myself, I've got to stop. This is, stop it. Stop it. Breath. Stop it. Breath. But it is. It's just stepping outside. So it's not that I have to stop it and stop it for good or stop it forever. It's just I've got to step outside for a minute and be right here where I need to be, or be right wherever I'm at the time. And so I think I really appreciate you saying that. And really the way you emphasized it, it was good. So I appreciate that. And then stepping off the cushion and even outside of the home, which, I kind of fail miserably at it anyhow. But work is kind of where I try and practice this a lot. And I try and kind of appreciate or think about it as we're in a retreat or something, an all-day retreat. And we're supposed to, and I of course I work with children, I have to look at them in the eye and pay attention and be very focused, but I try and think, next is, we'll get to what I always say, next event, and so really kind of look at it as that, chop the carrots, put on the water and do this, and it's really helpful, and I can't do it all the time, I don't remember it all the time, but it's really a helpful thing to do often and kind of practice that, this practice, so. But thank you, it was a wonderful show.
Paul?
Sorry, that's two. I guess now, in the beginning, I was also wondering, how does this, how does the case connect with your introduction? But now, what I'm thinking, and maybe the question is, is this right? At one point you said, in your first remarks about we imagine that we're experiencing emptiness, right? We think that we're experiencing emptiness. We think that we're seeing it. One of the things I took you to be saying was that we should beware of those moments, right? Because that seems to be, as I understood you to be saying, a sort of a, that's not the authentic experience of it, and I'm not putting it as well as you did. But we have Wuman's verse, and he seems to be, I read him anyway as chastising the fire of Qingliang, which is Wutaishan, beautiful place, saying, seeming to say that Fire is making these distinctions, right? He's using images, he's making distinctions inside, outside, this, that. But when they are rolled up, so when you roll up the blinds, right, you know, taking fire and extrapolating out these images there, the sky, the great sky is bright and clear, sounds good. But the great sky still does not match our way, but this seems to be the point, as I understand it, as I understand what you were saying. Why don't you throw away that sky completely, right? I mean, there's some sense of utter, what's the word? You know, it's just the other image, right? Other letting go, falling away, dropping off, whatever. So that not, there's not a breach of wind that will come through, right? So that all of this, somehow with a single eye, the one eye, the eye of oneness, all of these kinds of distinctions, metaphors, seem to not work, right? To not be there. And it just reminds me, you often get this image of the sun in Buddhist, some Buddhist writings. When you talk about the worldly sun, when you have the worldly sun, right, it illuminates only on the outside of things, and outside of buildings, it doesn't illuminate inside buildings. Whereas the great sun, sometimes, one of the Buddhas, right, the great sun Buddha, Daiichi, that light somehow is everywhere, right? It obliterates, if that's the right image. All of that thinking of, you know, gain and loss, lines are up and down, there's outside the sign, there's a great sky that is somehow not our great way, not our way.
Yeah, I think that the poem works in two ways. Talking about, in one sense, the emptiness of emptiness. Mm-hmm. That there is no thing emptiness. Right? So sort of there's a reference to the philosophical tradition. But I also think that koans are very helpful sometimes as sort of meditation cues. And it makes me think of maybe part of what you were saying, that we're sitting and we have some experience, and it may be very inspirational and very helpful and give us a better understanding of emptiness. But as soon as we start saying, oh, I see emptiness, oh, I'm opened up, oh, I'm one with everything, that's got to be dropped off too.
Yes. So the great sky does not match our way points back to ordinary life. Yeah. Just roll up the blinds. Do the next thing.
Come back.
I was going to offer a couple of modern commentaries on one gain, one loss. Uchiyama Roshi, Shohaku Okumura's teacher, said, loss is enlightenment, gain is a delusion. And Bob Dylan said, there's no success like failure, and a failure is no success at all. So, throw that in. Rangesh.
I have a question. Of course, it's a great way to listen to the poetic aspects of and then debating art. Is there also any specific way where any of the Zen masters or in Buddhism they have really put together real life situations, like stories from real life, where people can really, you know, they don't have to think too much. Like for me, I think I would dig deep in my mind to find the ability to really, to think so much. I mean, I would like to personally like to have easier examples, and things which reveal a lot. I don't know. Always think that things which are more simpler could be more useful I mean, in the sense, I'm saying that just the sense that it just takes a lot of energy and attention to really go around something.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, is there anything which you could recommend? You know, is there any book or any kind of...
Well, I think I sympathize with what you're saying. And I think that maybe it's true there is a former Rinzai monk who teaches Victor Hori, who's, I think he's teaching at the University of Montreal now.
I thought McGill.
Is he at McGill? Yeah. Who's translated especially a book called, I think it's Zen Dust. It's a translation.
Zen Sand.
Zen Sand, a translation of what I call Cabbing Verses. Collection of books of Cabbing Verses that when in the Rinzai tradition, after you present an answer to a koan that a teacher likes, then you have to come up with a poem or a folk saying from the 1,000 pages of books that illustrates the point of the koan. But his introduction is great, and he thinks that koans originated as it's the way they're presented in the collections as part of sort of an educated gentleman's game that was common in the Tang Dynasty, where one person at a party, especially a drinking party, would throw out a line for a poem, and the next person would add a line, and the next person would add a line, and they might contradict, and the whole idea was to have sparks of different images and so on. But the whole point was also to not say clearly what you wanted as a philosophical concept, but to say without saying. And that his view is that partly these texts and these stories, as valuable as they are put together in this way as an entertainment and sort of insider's game. And when the koans are used in training in Rinzai monasteries, you don't usually go through the entire story and set of commentaries. There are subsections, so you probably would just meditate with you'd have the story, but you would sit and just recite one gain, one loss. And see if that did anything for you. You'd have to present an answer, a demonstration that you understood one gain, one loss, and what that might mean to the teacher.
Why I was saying was that this is like a childhood practice which I have had, solving math or physics or chemistry. I would look at the solutions first and then I would look at the questions. So that way I would solve a lot more questions than, and then I would go to the, because most questions would be similar after that. So this is the way I did a lot of my math problems from the books and stuff. So basically, I would not spend too much time just thinking about problems, or probably look at the solutions first, like as a kid and stuff. So, and then,
I need to say, though, that I feel like these koans, certainly in Dogen's way and the Soto way of working with them, but I think also the way Victor Hori talks about the Rinzai way, these are not primarily, or not even really, problems to solve. This is not about getting the answer to some riddle. There is in this situation, in this case and in all the cases, something that has to do with our practice life. And the point of studying and sitting with these stories is not to figure out some answer or solution, but actually to let them soak into our practice body. And the way Victor Hori talks about it from the Rinzai tradition is very similar.
Yeah,